Technically, that's correct. It was a case of mistaken identity, though. Val's eyes glowed with interest. What did you do? Did you burn him? What? No, I used injectable chemical treatments. I find them more effective and they don't leave scars. Val rolled her body sideways along the marble, so she was turned to Daniel again, then pillowed her head against her arm. The kimono was partially dislodged by this maneuver, and Alex imagined his view was quite interesting. He stood awkwardly, one hand on the refrigerator door. Was it really painful? Val demanded.
Beyond anything I'd ever imagined, Daniel admitted.
Val seemed fascinated. Did you scream? Did you beg? Did you writhe? Daniel couldn't help but smile at her enthusiasm.
All of the above, I believe. Oh, and I cried like a baby as well.
Still smiling, he seemed suddenly comfortable. He turned back to the fridge and started rummaging. Val sighed.
I really wish I could have seen that.
You're into torture? Alex asked, hiding her concern. Of course Kevin would move them in with a true sadist.
Not torture, per se. But it's so intoxicating, isn't it? That kind of power.
I guess I've never looked at it quite that way. Val cocked her head to the side, looking at Alex with undisguised interest.
Isn't everything about power?
Alex thought about it for a moment. Not in my experience. Back when that was my job, honestly, it sounds naive now, even to me, I was really just trying to save people. There was always a lot hanging in the balance. It was stressful. Val considered that, pursing her lips.
That does sound naive.
Alex shrugged.
It never gave you a rush, being in control?
Val's wide lapis eyes bored into her. Alex wondered if people felt this way in a psychiatrist's office, this compulsion to speak. Or maybe it was more like being shackled to Alex's own table. I mean, maybe. I'm not a very dangerous person on the surface. I guess there were times that I appreciated the respect.
Val nodded. Of course you did. Tell me, have you ever tortured a woman?
Twice. Well, once and a half.
Explain.
Daniel's head was leaning back as he adjusted the flame under the stovetop grill. He was paying close attention. Alex hated talking about this in front of him. I didn't actually have to do anything to the first girl. She was confessing before she was even strapped to the table. She didn't belong in my lab anyway. Any normal interrogation would have gotten the same results.
Poor kid. What was she confessing to?
A terrorist cell was trying to coerce some suicide bombers in New York. They'd kidnapped someone's family back in Iran, in this case her parents, and kill the hostages if the subject wouldn't do as directed. The NSA had it under control before any of the bombs were detonated, but they lost several of the hostages. She sighed. It's always messy with terrorists.
What about the second?
That was an entirely different situation. Arms dealer.
Was she tough to break?
One of the toughest in my career. Val smiled as if the answer greatly pleased her.
I've always thought that women can handle a lot more pain than the so-called stronger sex. Men are all just oversized children, really.
Then she sighed.
I've made men beg, and I've made them writhe, and maybe there have been some tears here and there, but no one's ever cried like a baby.
Her full lower lip pushed out into a pout. I'm positive they would if you asked them to, Alex encouraged. Val smiled her glittery smile.
You're probably right.
Daniel was chopping something now. Alex decided she should slow down on the grapes. Dinner was sure to be worth the wait. Val rolled to the side again to watch him, and Alex felt a sudden urge to distract her. This is a beautiful place.
Yes.
It's nice, isn't it? A friend gave it to me. Oh, does he stay here often? How many people were going to know about them? She'd already been stupidly and bizarrely honest with this strange woman. It would surely come back to bite her.
No. Zhang and I broke up ages ago. He was too stuffy.
And he let you keep the place? Val stared at Alex, disbelieving.
Let me? What kind of a gift is it if the deed's not in your name?
That's a good point, Alex agreed quickly. What was that you were saying earlier? About putting Kevin down?
Oh, can I tell the story, please? Daniel butted in. It's my favorite.
Daniel stretched the story out, milking it for Val's laughs and coos. He made Alex sound more in control than she had been and fictionalized the parts he wasn't awake for. It was a better story his way, she had to admit. Val's expression as she assessed Alex now was 180 degrees from what it had been at their first meeting. Then the food was ready, and Alex stopped caring about much else. It had been a while since she'd had red meat, and her inner carnivore took over. When she came out of the frenzy, she saw that Val was watching her again, engrossed. Alex glanced down. Daniel had given Val a plate, too, but she'd eaten only a few slivers off the side of her steak.
Do you always eat so much? Val asked.
When it's available, I guess. When Daniel is cooking, definitely. Val's eyes narrowed.
I'll bet you never gain an ounce, do you?
I don't know. I probably must sometimes, right? Do you even own a scale? She demanded. Why would I? Alex asked, confused. Val blew out a puff of breath that ruffled the waves of hair over her forehead.
People with naturally high metabolisms piss me off.
Seriously? Alex said, looking her up and down. You're going to complain to me about our relative genetic heritages? Val stared at her for a few seconds, then smiled and shook her head.
Well, I suppose a girl can't have everything.
And you're just the exception that proves the rule?
I think I like you, Ollie.
Thanks, Val. It's actually Alex, though.
Whatever. You know, you've got a lot of untapped potential. With decent hair, some makeup, and a mid-sized boob job, you could do all right.
I do fine, as is, thanks. I have lower expectations out of life. It makes things easier.
Seriously, you cut your own hair, don't you?
I don't have another option.
Trust me, there's always another option to this.
She stretched across the counter and tried to touch the hair hanging in Alex's eyes, but Alex flinched out of her way. It was true that it was time for another trim. Val turned to Daniel, who was trying to be unobtrusive, leaning against the counter directly behind Val as he finished his food, almost like he was hiding from her. Well, Alex could understand that, and she completely understood why Daniel had found Val frightening on their first meeting.
Back me up, Danny. Don't you think Ollie could be pretty if she tried?
Daniel did the blinking thing he always did when taken by surprise.
But Alex is pretty now.
What a gentleman. It's like your bizarro Kevin.
I'll take that as a compliment.
It is a compliment. Maybe the best I've ever given.
Val agreed.
How long have you known him?
Daniel wondered.
Too long. I don't know why I keep opening the door when he comes begging. I guess it's that power thing.
She shrugged, and one shoulder of her silk robe slid down her arm. She didn't fix it.
I like watching someone so strong have to do what I say.
A key jangled in the front door. Alex slipped from the stool to her feet, muscles tensing automatically. Val watched as Daniel looked to Alex, tensing too, ready to follow her lead.
You two are funny, she murmured.
Einstein ran panting into the kitchen, and Alex relaxed. Val eyed the dog, his tongue lolling out and his eyes eager.
Does it want something?
He's probably thirsty, Alex told her.
Oh.
She glanced around the kitchen, then grabbed a decorative crystal bowl from the center of the island and filled it in the sink. Einstein licked her hand gratefully and then started lapping up the water.
Smells good,
Kevin commented as he came around the corner.
You can finish mine, Val said without looking at him. I'm done.
Experimentally, she stroked one of Einstein's ears. Kevin leaned comfortably against the island, looking very at home as he started cutting into Val's food.
Everyone getting along?
You were right, Val answered.
Kevin grinned triumphantly.
I told you she wouldn't bore you.
Val straightened up and smiled back.
Anyone who's chained you to the floor is bound to get along with me.
Kevin's grin disappeared. It was a draw.
Val threw back her chin and laughed, her long neck looking even more swan-like than before. Daniel turned the sink on and rummaged for dish soap. Alex joined him automatically, comforted by even just the opening chords of their usual routine. Once again, she was in an unfamiliar place, well out of her league, unsure and unsafe. But with Daniel there, she could handle it. He was like a gas mask, a touchstone of refuge. She smiled to herself, thinking how little he would care for that comparison. Well, she wasn't the romantic one.
"Oh, don't bother with that, sweetie," Val told Daniel. "The housekeeper comes every morning."
Alex shot Kevin a loaded glance, which Val caught.
"I'll leave a note on the counter, and he'll stay out of the bedrooms," Val assured her. "I know this is all very cloak and dagger. Don't worry, you won't be exposed on my account."
"I don't mind," Daniel said. "Dishes relax me."
"What is this brother of yours?" Val asked Kevin. "Can I keep him?"
Alex smiled when she saw Daniel's eyes widen in panic, but he kept his face down over the sink so Val didn't see. He handed Alex a clean pair of tongs, and she dried them with a dish towel that felt like silk and was probably meant to be ornamental. She had a feeling Val didn't care about things like that.
"He's not your type," Kevin answered.
"I have many types, though, don't I?"
"Fair enough, but I don't think he'll hold your interest long."
She sighed. "They so rarely do."
"So, back to this housekeeper. What time will he arrive, leave, etc.?" Alex asked. Val laughed.
"You take things very seriously.
People try to kill me a lot."
"That must get irritating," she said casually.
"When I'm in residence, Raoul comes early and leaves quickly. He won't even wake you. He's good." "I'll just lock the door then."
"If you like."
"We're not sleeping in tomorrow, Ollie," Kevin interjected. "There's a lot to get set before we act, and I don't want to waste more time."
"Give her the one morning off," Daniel insisted. "She's been driving all night for a week, sleeping in the back of cars. She needs rest."
Kevin made a disgusted face.
"She's not a child, Danny. The big kids have work to do."
"It's not a problem," Alex said quickly. She glanced at the clock on the oven. It was only 7. "I'm crashing now anyway, so I'm sure I'll be up long before Raoul arrives."
"I'll walk you through my inventory, then you can tell me what else you need. I've got the video footage of your subject, which I'm sure you'll want to review, and then..."
"Tomorrow, Kevin," Alex interrupted. "Now, sleep." Kevin inhaled noisily through his nose and rolled his eyes to the ceiling. Alex almost reached for Daniel's hand as she left the kitchen. She had to curl her fingers into a fist and hope Kevin hadn't noticed. It felt unnatural, and she knew Daniel felt it too. He followed close behind her, almost as if he were thinking about doing something to instigate the conversation, or possible altercation, that she was trying to avoid. "Not now," she tried to communicate to him telepathically without turning. She walked faster, but it was a wasted effort. Daniel's legs were too long for her to build any kind of lead. She felt much better when she heard him close the door behind him and click the lock into place.
"Thanks," she said, turning to wrap her arms around his waist.
"Only because we're exhausted," he reminded her. "I will be much more tenacious tomorrow."
She was really dragging, so she went through only the most important parts of the routine. She didn't want to bother with rebandaging her face, so she decided to let her skin breathe for the night. The wound was still bright red and puckered, and the stitches in her ear, though she'd used a flesh-toned suture thread, were hard to miss. It looked like the two halves of her lobe would rejoin, though. She'd have a nasty scar, but she didn't want to think about that now. She thought about setting up the cot in the closet for show, but decided to wait till morning. It wasn't like Kevin was going to do a room inspection. She also considered stringing a gas canister line around the door. She didn't think she had the energy, and anyway, an intruder would surely check the master first, if he got past Einstein. She settled for putting her cig and belt on the bedside table. Daniel was in the bed before her, but he was still awake.
"Should I leave my rifle out, do you think?" he asked.
"It's a big room, but probably a little tight for the rifle. I can go grab the shotgun."
He gave her an exasperated look.
I was joking.
Oh, right. He held his arms open for her. She switched off the lamp and climbed into her now usual place. The bed was absurd, some kind of soft, supportive cloud that was probably made from spun gold or unicorn mane.
Good night, Alex,
he whispered into her hair. And then she was asleep. She woke while it was still dark outside. The faint light glowing from around the edges of the shades was the unnatural yellow-green of city lights. She couldn't see a clock, but she'd guess it was around 4. A solid night's rest, and then some. She was glad. Today would be long. For years now, all she'd been doing was running and surviving. Now she had to shift into a more proactive mode, and she dreaded it. There had been her one uncharacteristic adventure in Texas, but she blamed that on the adrenaline of the moment and the unfamiliar responsibility of having a liability. It wasn't something she would ever have planned to do. So when Daniel, woken by her movements, started to kiss her throat, she didn't mind procrastinating for a bit. She wondered what it would be like to be a normal person, to be able to expect that mornings like this, waking up with someone you'd chosen, would happen over and over again. To go through the day certain that you'd lie back down at the end of it in the same bed with that same person next to you. She doubted many people appreciated that certainty when they had it. It would be too much a part of everyday life to them, taken for granted, not something they would think of feeling grateful for. Well, she couldn't count on another morning like this, but she could be grateful for it now. She yanked on his t-shirt, and he pulled his hands out of her hair long enough to remove it. Alex tugged her own shirt out of the way, greedy for the feeling of his skin next to hers. His kisses, which had begun so tenderly, started to veer more toward the unrestrained, though she could almost hear him reminding himself to be careful with her. She didn't want any of that. She kissed him back in a way designed to make him forget any other consideration. There was no sound. No warning. She didn't hear the lock turn or the door open. And then suddenly, the metallic click of a gun safety sliding off just inches from her head. She froze and felt Daniel do the same. She wasn't sure if he'd recognized the quiet click as she had, or was just responding to her. From the sound, she knew the intruder was closer to the nightstand holding her gun than she was. She cursed herself for neglecting basic security and worked to think of any move left to her. Maybe if she tried to spin and kick the gun away, it would give Daniel time to get around him. And then the intruder spoke.
Step away from the civilian, you poisonous little snake!
She blew out the huge gasp of air she'd been holding in.
Let's put the gun down now, psychopath.
Not until you get off my brother. This is so far beyond crossing the line, I don't even know what to call it,
Daniel said in a harsh tone.
Did you pick the lock? Danny, listen to me. She's drugged you again. That's what's happening here.
As if I would waste my limited supply on recreation, she muttered. She rolled, tugging the sheet up to cover herself, and reached for the lamp. She felt the cool barrel of the gun press into her forehead.
You're ridiculous, she told him as she switched the light on.
Kevin stepped back, blinking in the light. He still had his long, silenced pistol aimed at her face. The bed rocked as Daniel vaulted agilely over her body and placed himself between her and Kevin.
What are you doing? Don't point that at her! Daniel, I don't know what she has you on, but we'll get it out of your system, I promise. Come with me. If you know what is good for you, you will turn around and walk away now. I'm saving you here. Thanks, but no thanks. I was quite happy with what I was doing before you so rudely interrupted. I'd like to return to it. Shut the door behind you.
What's happened? Alex asked, yanking her t-shirt on. There was no time for this squabbling. Kevin was wearing only a pair of pajama pants, so whatever the catalyst was, he hadn't had time to prepare himself. It wasn't like Kevin to let something, even something this offensive to him, distract him when there was trouble. She leaned around Daniel to grab her belt and then wrapped it around her waist as she spoke. Do we need to move? She reached for the SIG next and shoved it into the back of her belt. Kevin's gun lowered slowly, and he started to look less confident as he was confronted with her practicality.
I didn't believe her, so I came to check,
he admitted, suddenly sheepish.
I wasn't planning on Danny ever knowing I was here.
Her?
Daniel asked.
Val. She said you two were together. She was so sure of herself. I said there was no way in hell!
His voice was outraged again by the end. Daniel exhaled, irritated.
Well, I hope you made some kind of bet, with a very humiliating consequence for losing. This is punishment enough,
Kevin grumbled.
In all seriousness, Daniel said, get out, Kevin.
I can't believe this, Danny. What are you thinking? After what she did to you?
Daniel was still between Alex and Kevin, so she couldn't see his face, but she could suddenly hear a smile in his voice.
You're supposed to be so tough, so dangerous, and yet you're saying you'd let a little pain come between you and the woman you wanted? Really?
Kevin rocked a step back and took a few seconds to respond.
But why? Why do you want her?
The anger had vanished. When he looked at Alex, there was only bewilderment.
I'll explain it to you when you've grown up. Now for the last time, get out! Or...
And he reached one long arm around Alex's body and pulled the gun from her back.
I'll shoot you.
He pointed the gun at Kevin's torso. The safety is off on that, Alex murmured.
Counting on it, Daniel replied.
Kevin stared at them, Daniel holding the gun steady, Alex watching from behind his arm, and then his shoulders squared again. He pointed at Alex with his free hand.
You. Just. Stop.
He waved his hand in a big, inclusive gesture, taking in the two of them and the bed.
All of this. We leave in 15. Be ready.
His hand shifted to Danny. He blew out a deep breath, shook his head, and then turned and walked out the door. He didn't bother closing it.
Damn it, Val!
He shouted, as he headed through the dark hall, as if all of this were somehow her fault. Einstein barked from upstairs. Alex sighed and stretched. Well, that went about exactly as I thought it would. No shots fired. This was the best-case scenario, I guess.
Where are you going? Daniel asked.
To shower. You heard the man. 15 minutes.
It's the middle of the night.
All the better to hide my face. You're not tired, are you? I think we've been asleep for 9 hours, at least. Daniel scowled.
No, I'm not in the least bit tired.
Well, then. She started toward the bathroom door.
Wait.
Daniel jumped up, ruffling his hair as he walked to the bedroom door. He shut it and then locked it again. What's the point of that, really? Alex asked. Daniel shrugged.
Touché.
He walked to her and wrapped his hands around her upper arms, holding her securely.
I wasn't ready to get out of bed.
Kevin's not going to knock, she reminded him. He probably won't even give me the full 15.
I don't like letting him call the shots. Not only was I not ready to get out of bed, I was not ready for you to get out of bed either.
He bent his head down to kiss her, his hands running slowly up her shoulders till they were cradling her face. She knew that under normal circumstances, it would have taken very little convincing on his part to get her to agree, but these were not normal circumstances. And the idea that Kevin might walk into the room at any moment, probably with gun in hand again, tempered her response. She pulled back. What about a compromise? The look he gave her was less than thrilled.
I categorically refuse to compromise in any way for Kevin's sake.
Can I please at least make my case before you dismiss it? He kept his expression stern, but she could tell he wanted to smile.
Do what you have to do, but I will not be swayed.
We have limited time, and we both need to clean up. That shower slash lap pool in there will easily fit 2. Well, actually, it could fit 12. And I was thinking we could multitask. The hard line expression disappeared.
I immediately withdraw my opposition and offer my full cooperation.
I thought you might see it that way.
Chapter 25.
Because there's no reason for you to go,
Kevin objected. Kevin stood in front of the elevator doors, blocking the call button, arms crossed over his chest.
Why not? Daniel demanded. You're not going to be part of the offensive, Danny, so you don't need to be part of the preparation.
Daniel's lips mashed together into a scowl, and his neck started to turn red. It doesn't hurt anything for him, Alex began mildly.
Except someone could see his face, Kevin growled.
You mean your face? She countered.
I'm smart enough to keep my head down.
Daniel rolled his eyes.
I'll ride in the trunk if you want.
Kevin evaluated the two of them for a long second.
Are you going to let me focus?
What do you mean? Alex asked. Kevin closed his eyes. He seemed to be calming himself. He inhaled through his nose, then looked at Daniel.
Here are my requirements for you to join us on this very boring, standard recon exercise. No one will speak of what happened this morning. I will not be forced to remember the nauseating things I witnessed. There will be no discussion that might allude to said nauseating things. This is business, and you will conduct yourself appropriately. Agreed?
Daniel's neck started to flush. She was sure he was going to mention the fact that if Kevin hadn't broken into a locked room in the middle of the night, he wouldn't have seen anything. Before Daniel could object, Alex said, Agreed. Appropriate business-like behavior. Kevin glanced back and forth between them, measuring again. After a second, he turned and hit the call button. Daniel gave her a, really, look. Alex shrugged.
None of that,
Kevin commanded, though he still had his back to them. What? Daniel complained.
I can feel you two silently communicating. Stop it!
It was a quiet drive in the average-looking black sedan. She didn't know if it was Val's car or something Kevin had acquired. It didn't seem like Val's style, but maybe she liked to be incognito sometimes. Alex appreciated the heavily tinted windows. She felt less exposed as she sat with her ball cap pulled low over her face and stared out at the still mostly sleeping city. They were early enough to beat the morning rush. Kevin drove through a seedier section of town, more the kind of neighborhood she would have expected his hiding place to exist in. He pulled in at a storage facility that seemed to be mostly enormous cargo containers. There was no guard posted, just a keypad and a heavy metal gate with razor wire coils on top. Kevin drove them to a spot near the back of the fenced lot and parked behind a dingy orange container. The lot appeared to be empty, but Alex kept her face down and her walk unfeminine as they moved to the wide double doors that made up the front wall of the container. Kevin plugged a complicated sequence of numbers into the heavy-duty rectangular lock, then pulled it out of the way. He opened one door just a few feet and waved them inside. It was black when Kevin pulled the door shut behind himself. Then there was a low click, and rope lights lining the ceiling and the floor glowed to life. "Exactly how many bat caves do you have?" Alex demanded.
"Just a few here and there, where I might need them," Kevin said. "This one's mobile, so that helps."
The inside of Kevin's cargo container was tightly packed, but compulsively organized. Like the barn in Texas, there was a place for everything. Racks of clothing, costumes really, were wedged against the wall by the double doors. She was sure that was on purpose. If someone got a glimpse inside while the doors were open, all he would see was clothes. A casual observer wouldn't think anything of it. A more careful observer might think it was odd that uniforms for every branch of the military were hanging together, along with mechanics' coveralls and several utility companies' official garb, not to mention the raggedy components of a homeless man's outfit hanging a few feet down from a row of dark suits that ranged from off-the-rack to high-end designer. A person could blend into a lot of situations with these clothes. The props were in bins over the clothes racks, briefcases and clipboards, toolboxes and suitcases. The shoes were in clear plastic boxes underneath. Beyond the costumes, deep floor-to-ceiling metal cabinets were installed. Kevin guided her through each. She took note of the things she might need. As in the barn, there was a space for guns, for ammo, for armor, for explosives,
for knives. There were other things that hadn't been in Texas, or if they were, they'd been better hidden than the rest. He had a cabinet full of various tech items, tiny cameras and bugs, tracking devices, night vision goggles, binoculars and scopes, electromagnetic pulse generators of various sizes, a few laptop computers, and dozens of gadgets she didn't recognize. He identified the code breakers, the frequency readers, the frequency jammers, the system hackers, the mini drones. She lost track after a while. It was unlikely that she would want to use anything she wasn't familiar with. The next cabinet was chemical compounds. "Yes," she hissed, digging past the front row to see what was behind. "This I can use."
"Thought you'd appreciate that."
"Do you mind?" she asked, holding up a sealed cylinder of a catalytic she knew she was almost out of.
"Take whatever you want. I don't think I've ever used any of that stuff."
She crouched down to the lower shelf and loaded several more jars and packages into her backpack. Ah, this one she needed. "Then why do you have it?" Kevin shrugged.
"I had access. Never look a gift horse."
"Ha!" She stared up at him triumphantly.
"What?"
"You told me that was a stupid saying." Kevin raised his eyes to the ceiling.
"Sometimes it's really hard not to kick you."
"I know precisely how you feel." Daniel moved to stand between her and Kevin. She shook her head at him. It was just banter. With the brief lecture on appropriate behavior out of the way, Kevin had shifted back to his normal self, something in between a serial killer and the world's most obnoxious big brother. Alex was getting used to it. She didn't mind him as much anymore. Grumbling about silent communication, Kevin stalked back to the ammo cabinet and started filling a large black bag with reserves. "First aid?" she asked.
"In the knife locker, top shelf."
There were several zippered black bags over the knives, some of them about the size of a backpack, others smaller, like shaving kits. She couldn't reach any of them, so Daniel pulled them down and she combed through them on the floor. The first smaller bag she opened had no medical supplies. Instead, there were little packets of documents neatly rubber-banded together for easy sorting. She quickly pulled out a Canadian passport and glanced at the ID page. As she'd expected, there was a photo of Kevin with a different name, Terry Williams. She glanced up. Kevin had his back to her. She grabbed two of the packets and stuffed them into the bottom of her backpack, then zipped the bag closed. These particular items wouldn't be of any help to her, but she had to be prepared for other outcomes. She peeked at Daniel. He wasn't paying attention to her either. He was looking at the array of knives with a disbelieving expression. It made her wonder how long he could survive on his own with what he'd learned so far. Alex pulled open one of the bigger bags, but wasn't thrilled with what she found inside. It was a fairly basic kit, with nothing that she didn't already have. She checked the next bag, then the last. Nothing that wasn't in the first.
"What's missing?"
Kevin asked. She jumped slightly. She hadn't heard him approach. He must have read her disappointed expression. "I'd like access to some decent trauma supplies, just in case."
"Okay. Grab up whatever else you want here, and then we'll go get some."
"Just that easy?" she asked, skeptically.
"Sure."
She raised one eyebrow. "We're going to walk into a medical facility and ask to purchase some surplus?"
"No."
He made a face, implying the stupidity of her suggestion.
"Haven't you ever heard the phrase, 'it fell off a truck'? You got some of that knockout stuff on you now?"
"Yes."
"Then hurry, so we can get out of there before all the trucks have finished their deliveries."
Alex's backpack was now stocked with ammo for her various appropriated guns. The Sig Sauer, the Glock she hadn't abandoned, the shotgun, Daniel's rifle, and her own PPK. She'd taken two extra handguns from the stash because you never knew, and ammo for those as well. From the tech case, she'd grabbed two sets of goggles, some trackers, and two EMP generators of different sizes. She wasn't sure what she would use any of them for, but she might not have time to get back here if there was an emergency. While she shopped through his gear, Kevin reset the lock so that the usual birthdate code would let her back in. Or Daniel, if things really went south.
"So what are my options for chemically incapacitating another human being?"
Kevin asked when they were back on the road. Alex drove this time. Let's see. Do you want airborne or contact? Kevin gave her a sidelong look.
Which do you recommend?
Depends on your approach. Will the target be in an enclosed space?
How would I know? I'll be improvising.
She huffed out of breath. Fine. Take both. Daniel, can you grab the perfume bottle in the outside pocket of my backpack? It's in a Ziploc bag.
Found it,
Daniel said after a minute.
Here.
He passed it up to Kevin. Kevin turned it over in his hands.
Looks empty.
Mm-hmm, Alex agreed. Pressurized gas. Now, she said, stretching her left arm across her body and holding her hand toward him. Take the silver one. He pulled the ring off her third finger, and then his eyebrows mashed down in surprise when the tiny clear tube and attached rubber squeeze pouch came out one after the other, like a couple of handkerchiefs from the sleeve of a mediocre magician. His expression turned skeptical.
What's this supposed to do?
See the little hatch on the inside? Swing it open. Be careful. Kevin examined the tiny hollow barb, then looked at the little round rubber bag. It was quiet enough to hear the faint sound of liquid sloshing inside. Hold the pouch in your palm, she directed, pantomiming as she explained. Put your hand down hard on your target, she gestured to Daniel, who obligingly held out his arm. She grabbed his wrist, not violently, just forcefully. The subject will feel the prick and try to pull away automatically. Hold on. If you're doing it right, the liquid in the pouch will be expelled through the barb. She released Daniel when she finished.
And then what happens?
Kevin asked. Your target takes a nap. For an hour, maybe two, depending on his or her size.
This thing is tiny,
he complained, holding the ring between his thumb and forefinger and staring through the hole. Sorry, I'll try to have bigger hands for you next time. Put it on your pinky.
Who wears a pinky ring?
She smiled. I think it will suit perfectly. Daniel chuckled. Kevin shoved the ring onto his littlest finger, but it made it only over his first knuckle. The pouch barely reached his palm. He'd need more tubing if he ever wanted to hide it in his sleeve. He frowned at the apparatus for a moment, then suddenly grinned.
Neat.
Daniel leaned forward and gestured to the rings Alex still wore.
What do those other two do?
She lifted her right hand, wiggling her ring finger with the gold band. Kills you easy. She held up the middle finger of her left hand with the rose gold band. Kills you hard.
Oh, hey,
Kevin said in sudden realization.
Is that what that girly slap back in West Virginia was about?
Yes.
Damn. You're one dangerous little spider, Ollie.
She nodded in agreement. If I were taller or you were shorter, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Well, I guess that was your lucky day.
She rolled her eyes.
Which one did you try to hit me with?
She held up the middle finger on her left hand again.
Harsh,
Kevin commented.
Why don't those rings have all the extra stuff?
He waved his hand so that the tube and pouch swung beneath his hand. Be careful, she warned. That could detach. Kevin caught the little bag and cradled it in his palm.
Right.
My other rings are coated with venom. A little goes a long way. Just one drop of cone snail venom is enough to kill 20 men your size.
Let me guess. You keep cone snails and black widow spiders as pets back home?
No time for pets. And really, black widow venom is on the very weak end of the damage scale. No. I used to have access to a lot of things. I studied cone snail venom briefly because of the way it targets particular classes of receptors. I was never one to waste an opportunity. I kept what I could, and I'm careful with my supplies now. Kevin looked down at the ring he wore again, considering. It kept him quiet, which Alex appreciated. She chose Howard University Hospital because it was a level one trauma center, and she knew her way around the facility, unless a lot had changed in the past 10 years. She did a slow loop around the buildings, scanning for camera placement and police presence. It was not even 7 a.m., but there were plenty of people coming and going.
How about that one?
Kevin asked, pointing. No, that will mostly be linens and paper goods, she muttered.
Take a break before you do another lap. We don't want to be noticed.
I know how this works, she lied. She drove a few streets west and stopped at a small green space. A handful of joggers were doing their rounds, but it was otherwise fairly empty. They waited in silence for 10 minutes. Then she pulled out and drove a wider circle, staying 2 blocks out from the roads around the hospital. Eventually, she spotted something promising, a white truck labeled Halbert and Sowerby Suppliers. She was familiar with the company and was pretty sure they would have usable goods on board. She tailed the truck into a loading area behind the main building of the hospital. Kevin was ready, fingers already wrapped around the door handle.
"Just drop me behind them, then wait a block up," he told her.
Nodding, she slowed to a brief pause just behind the truck, too close for Kevin to be seen in the mirrors. Once he was out, she reversed a couple of feet and then drove away at the exact posted speed. She glanced into the truck from under her hat as she passed. There was only a driver, no passengers. Still, there were plenty of people in scrubs and maintenance uniforms on the sidewalk. She hoped Kevin could be unobtrusive about this. She braked at the stop sign on the corner, wondering how she was supposed to wait here when there was no parking. Before she could decide, she saw the white truck coming up behind her, one car back. She drove ahead slowly, goading the car between them to pass, then letting Kevin pass too. She could see the driver, a very young-looking black man, leaning against the passenger side window with his eyes closed. "Well, there aren't any cops following him, yet," she muttered, as she began following.
"Will it hurt the guy?"
Daniel asked.
"What Kevin stuck him with?"
"Not really. He'll have an awful hangover when he wakes up, but nothing permanent." Kevin drove for about 20 minutes, first putting some distance between them and the hospital, then seeking the right place for the transfer of goods. He decided on a quiet industrial park, pulling to the back, where there were several empty loading spaces near closed, roll-down access doors. He backed into one, and she parked next to him, on the lee side, where she would be invisible to anyone entering the lot. She yanked on a pair of latex gloves, handed another to Daniel, and shoved a pair into her pocket. Kevin already had the back door of the truck open. She handed him the extra gloves, then boosted herself up onto the floor of the cargo hold. Everything inside was secured in opaque white plastic bins, stacked high and anchored to the walls with red nylon cords. "Help me get these open," she instructed. Kevin started pulling the bins down and removing the lids. Daniel climbed in and followed his lead. Alex went behind them, sorting through her options. Her main worry was being shot. It seemed the most likely fallout from an offensive action. Of course, she couldn't rule out being knifed or beaten with a blunt object. Still, she was very happy when she found a bin with blowout kits. Each had tourniquets, gauze impregnated with quick clot, and a variety of chest seals. She started a pile, adding different kinds of closure strips and gauze packs, dressings and compression bandages, chemical heating and cooling packs, resuscitation kits, a few bag valve masks, alcohol and iodine wipes, splints and collars, burn dressings, IV catheters and tubing, saline bags, and handfuls of sealed syringes.
"You planning to start your own field hospital?" Kevin asked.
"You never know what you might need," she countered, then added in her mind, "You might be the one who needs this stuff, idiot."
"Here,"
Daniel offered, turning one of the half-depleted bins upside down and dumping what was left into another. He took the now-empty bin and started organizing her pile inside. "Thanks. I think I've got everything I want." Kevin secured the bins to the wall, then wiped down the door. She followed him again until he found a place to leave the truck and driver, behind a small strip mall. He quickly cleaned his fingerprints from the cab, and they were on their way. When they got back to the apartment, Raul the housekeeper had been and gone, and Val was lying across a low sofa watching a big-screen TV that Alex could have sworn was not there yesterday. It was playing a black-and-white movie. Today, Val wore a pale blue jumpsuit with short shorts and a plunging neckline. Einstein lay on the sofa beside her with his muzzle on her arm. She was petting him rhythmically, and he didn't get up to greet them as they came through the door. He just pounded his tail against the sofa when he saw Kevin.
"So, how did all the spying go?" she asked lazily.
"Just boring groundwork," Kevin said.
"Ugh, then don't tell me about it. And don't leave any of that new stuff in here either. I don't want the clutter."
"Yes, ma'am,"
Kevin agreed docilely, and he headed back to Alex and Daniel's room to add to the storage pile.
"I'll get you hooked up on my computer, Ollie," he said, as he stacked. "You can watch the playback from the cameras I've got on Karsten, and you can listen. There's a bug in the car, and a directional mic on the office. The car has a tracker, too, so you can follow his movements for the past several days."
Alex exhaled, already exhausted by the mound of intel to assess. "Thanks."
"I'm starved," Daniel said. "Anyone else for breakfast?"
"Yes, please," Alex said, at the same time that Kevin answered,
"Hell yeah!"
Daniel smiled and turned for the door. Alex watched him walk away, then realized that Kevin was watching her watch Daniel.
"What?"
Kevin pursed his lips, as if he were looking for the right way to express himself. He automatically glanced at the bed, still rumpled. Raoul had not been allowed in here, and shuddered. Alex turned her back on him and went to retrieve her own computer. She'd want to move the important files onto it.
"Ollie."
She didn't look up from what she was doing. "What?"
"Can I?"
She held her computer to her chest and turned to face him, waiting for him to finish. Unconsciously, she squared her shoulders. He hesitated again, then asked,
"Can I ask you some questions, without getting any specific or graphic answers?"
"Like what?"
"This thing with Danny. I don't want him to get hurt."
"That's not a question." He glared, then took a deep breath, forcing himself to relax.
"When we finish up here, where do you go?"
It was her turn to hesitate. It kind of feels like a jinx to assume that I'm going to survive. I honestly haven't thought about what's next.
"Come on, this isn't that hard,"
he said disparagingly. "It's not what I do. You handle it your way, I'll handle it mine."
"You want me to take care of Karsten too?"
"No," she growled, though if his tone hadn't been so condescending, she would have been tempted. "I'll take care of my own problems." He paused, then asked,
"So, what? Do you think you're just going to tag along with us after?"
"That wouldn't be my first choice, no. Going with the theory that I'm still alive then, of course."
"You're a real pessimist."
"It's part of the way I plan. Expect the worst."
"Whatever. Back to my point. If you go your own way, what about Danny? Is it just goodbye, thanks for the laughs?"
She looked away toward the door. "I don't know. That depends on what he wants. I can't speak for him." Kevin was silent long enough that she finally had to look back. His face was uncharacteristically vulnerable. Like always, when his features were allowed to relax, he looked a lot more like Daniel.
"You think he'd choose to follow you?"
Kevin asked very quietly.
"I mean, he just met you. He barely knows you, but I guess he probably feels like he barely knows me, too, at this point."
"I don't know what he'll want," she said. "I would never ask him to make that choice." Kevin focused on the air a few inches above her head.
"I really wanted the chance to make things up to him, to set him up in a life he could live with. I was hoping, after a while, we could be brothers again."
She had an odd urge to walk across the space between them and put her hand on his shoulder, probably just because he was still looking like Daniel. "I won't get in the way of that," she promised. She meant it. Whatever was best for Daniel, that was the main thing. Kevin stared at her for a minute, his face hardening and turning back to normal. He blew out a huge sigh.
"Well, damn it, Ollie. I wish I'd just left that Tacoma thing alone. Millions of lives saved, really. What does that add up to, in the face of my brother sleeping with Lucrezia Borgia?"
Alex froze. "What did you say?" He grinned.
"Surprised that I know the appropriate historical analogy? I did pretty well in school, actually. I've got just as many brain cells as my brother."
"No, about Tacoma. What do you mean?" His grin shifted to confusion.
"You know all about that. They gave you the file. You interrogated Danny."
She leaned toward him, unconsciously clutching her computer more tightly against her ribs. "This is about the job you did with De La Fuentes? Does the T in TCX-1 stand for Tacoma?"
"I'd never heard of TCX-1, The De La Fuente's job was about the Tacoma virus.
The Tacoma plague?
I never heard it called that. What's going on, Ollie?
Alex yanked open her computer as she climbed onto the foot of the bed. She pulled up the most recent file she'd worked on, her coded case notes. She scrolled through the list of numbers and initials, feeling the bed shift as Kevin put one knee on it, leaning to read over her shoulder. It felt like a long time since she'd written these notes. So much had happened, and the thoughts she'd attached to these brief lines were faded. There it was. Terrorist event number 3, TP, the Tacoma plague. The letters danced in front of her eyes, only some of them resolving into words in her memory. J. IP. That was the town in India, on the Pakistani border. She couldn't remember what the name of the terrorist cell was, only that they originated out of Fatah Jang. She looked at the initials for the connected names, DH. That was the scientist, Haugen. OM was Mirwani, the terrorist. And then P, the other American she couldn't remember. She pressed her fist to her forehead, trying to force her recall.
Ollie?
Kevin said again. I worked this case, years ago, when the formula was first stolen from the U.S., long before De La Fuentes got hold of it.
Stolen from the U.S.? De La Fuentes got it out of Egypt.
No. It was developed in a lab just outside Tacoma. It was supposed to be theoretical, just research. Haugen, Dominic Haugen, that was the scientist. The story came back to her as she concentrated. He was on our side, but with the theft, the situation became too sensitive for him to continue where he was. The NSA buried him in a lab somewhere under their control. We had the terrorist cell second in command. He gave up the location of the lab in Jammu that was successfully creating the virus from the stolen blueprints. Black Ops raised the lab. They thought they had the biological weapon aspect locked up, but there were members of the cell who slipped through. As far as I know, the department was still working with the CIA on hunting them down a couple of years later, when Barnaby was killed. She looked up at him, the wheels in her head spinning so fast that she felt physically dizzy. When the CIA called you in, when they burned you, you said there were issues you were trying to track down. What were they? He blinked fast, reminding her of Daniel again.
The packaging on the vaccinations. The outside was in Arabic, but the inside packaging, the original labels, everything was in English. And the name, too. Tacoma. It didn't make sense. If De La Fuentes had wanted them translated, he would have had it changed from Arabic to Spanish. I wanted to trace the virus back. I was sure it hadn't originated in Egypt. I figured there had to be an American or a Brit working with a developer somewhere. I wanted to find the guy. You're saying this thing started in Washington State?
It's got to be the same thing. The timing's right. We get some info about the virus. Suddenly, they start watching me and Barnaby. 2 years later, around the time De La Fuentes got his hands on it, right? They murder Barnaby. That has to be the catalyst. That's why they killed him and tried to kill me. Because the virus was out there again, and if the public found out, we knew something that could connect it back. Barnaby had never told her what had triggered his paranoia, why he'd decided they needed to be ready to flee. She looked at the letters on her screen. D.H. Dominic Haugen. It was unlikely that the bad guys would leave Haugen alive if they'd felt the need to erase her and Barnaby. Had Haugen been the first to die? Probably in some totally normal, expected way. Car accident. Heart attack. There were so many methods to make it look innocent. Had Barnaby seen some notice of Haugen's death? Had that been the tip-off? She wanted to do a quick search online, but if she was right about this, then Haugen's name was sure to be flagged. Anyone inquiring into his death, no matter how anonymous the method, would be noticed. Who was the P? She couldn't even be positive she had that letter right. It had been a fleeting mention. Something short, she thought, something snappy.
Ollie, the packaging. It looked professional? Is that the right word? It wasn't something put together in a makeshift lab somewhere in the Middle East.
They stared at each other for a moment. I always thought it was a stretch. she murmured. That someone could actually fabricate the virus from nothing more than Haugen's theoretical design. It seemed the equivalent of winning the terrorist lottery.
You think they stole more than notes?
Haugen must have done it. Actually created the thing. If there was a supply that large, if the vaccine was packaged up so neatly, they must have been producing it. So working on weaponized viruses wasn't just Haugen's weekend hobby. It was a military project. There were hints of that, something about a lieutenant general's involvement. No one wanted to follow up on the American side of things. They kept us focused on the cell. Usually they let us ask the questions that naturally followed, but I remember this was different. Karsten fed me the questions he wanted.
So we got burned on the same case,
Kevin said darkly. I don't believe in that big a coincidence.
Neither do I.
Who are they protecting? Alex wondered. Whoever it is, he's got to be calling the shots. Which means he knows about both of us.
Which means we've got to get to him, too.
They stared at each other again.
Alex, Kev, guys, is this place soundproofed?
Alex looked up slowly, her eyes not totally focusing on Daniel walking through the doorway.
Is something wrong?
Daniel asked in a quieter tone as he took in the tableau. He hurried to the bed and put one hand on Alex's shoulder.
Just putting a few things together,
Kevin said grimly. Daniel looked to Alex. We need to add another name to our list, she told him.
Who? That's the problem,
Kevin said. Let me think, Alex said. If I didn't know the answer to that question, they wouldn't have tried to kill me. She glanced up at Kevin. I know this is incredibly nonspecific, but did you ever hear a name beginning with a P involved with this on your end?
A P? I'll have to think about it, but not offhand. I'll go through Deaver's calls again, see if I can turn anything up.
I'll work on it while I go through the Karsten stuff. Kevin nodded, then looked at Daniel.
I hope you came in here because there's some food ready. Gotta feed Ollie's big brain so she can figure this out.
They set their computers up on the big kitchen island and started into it while they ate. Val and Einstein hadn't moved, but they were watching the shopping channel now. Daniel pulled a stool up beside Alex and looked on as she scanned through the video of the front of Karsten's very respectable-looking townhouse. She fast-forwarded through the downtime when no one was in residence, simultaneously listening to Karsten's phone calls on her earbuds. Karsten was careful. His work conversations were vague, never naming any person or project specifically, and since the office calls were recorded on an exterior microphone, she could only hear his side. He used so many pronouns it was impossible to follow. She could tell only that there were a few he's and him's that were getting on Karsten's nerves in a bad way, and that at least one project was not going well. He sounded stressed. That could have been because of what happened in Texas, and the email to Devers. Did Karsten feel in danger? Did he think Kevin knew about him? He would have to play it safe, just in case. Karsten didn't get to where he was now by not being paranoid enough. His house had an alarm system, ornamental bars on the first floor windows, and exterior cameras. Some of the footage Kevin gave her appeared to be from those cameras. He must have hacked into the system. The street wasn't ideal. Lots of close neighbors, lots of activity on the street both morning and night. A plethora of witnesses.
You have to break into that?
Daniel muttered as she pulled up yet another camera angle of the barred windows. Hopefully not. Alex pointed to the small woman who was walking up the front stairs. She had several paper grocery bags weighing her down as she stuck her key in the door and unlocked the deadbolt. From this angle, Alex could see as she paused in the doorway and punched in the code for the alarm. Her hand covered the keypad. There was no way to read the sequence.
Housekeeper?
Daniel asked. Looks like. And she does his shopping.
Is that good?
It might be. If I could get a new face so I would be able to follow her around a bit.
What about me? Daniel asked. I haven't been on the news in a while.
Daniel, we haven't watched the news in a while. She pointed out.
Oh, you think they're doing the bad guy story now?
It's possible. We should check it out.
You want the news?
Val called from the sofa in the adjacent room.
Not if you're using the TV now,
Daniel said politely.
There's another one in the cabinet to the left of the fridge. Two over, she told them.
Daniel walked to the indicated cupboard and pulled the door open to reveal a television screen recessed into the space. The door rolled back into a side pocket.
Sweet,
Kevin muttered, glancing up from his own computer for half a second. Alex went back to her research, while Daniel flipped through channels until he found a 24-hour news network. He set the volume low, then came back to sit with her. Alex didn't hear Val get up, but suddenly the blonde was leaning over her shoulder.
That looks really dull, she commented.
Well, adding my mortality into the equation spices it up a bit, Alex told her.
Did you say you needed a new face?
Yes. See, the bruises and bandages make me too memorable.
And being memorable isn't a good thing in your case?
No.
I could do that.
Huh?
Alex asked. Give you a new face.
Alex turned to give Val her full attention.
What do you mean?
Chapter 26.
This would be easier if you'd stop trying to do two things at once, Val complained.
Sorry, I'm sort of on a deadline.
Just hold your head still.
Alex did the best she could. She had Kevin's laptop on her knees with her earbuds plugged into it. While Karsten was in his car, she could hear both sides of the conversation. Unfortunately, it seemed Karsten usually chose to use his driving time to connect with his only daughter, Erin. They spoke almost non-stop about the granddaughter, the one whose picture was in Alex's locket, and after the first 40-minute discussion about which pre-kindergarten program was most likely to result in an Ivy League happy ending, Alex had started fast-forwarding as soon as she heard the daughter's voice, or, if Karsten was in the office, the special tone he used only to speak to Erin. They talked a lot more than Alex would have expected. She stretched her fingers down and touched the play button. Erin was still blathering on, something about taking Livy to the zoo. Alex hadn't missed anything. She hit fast-forward again.
I want you to know this is an imperfect job, and it's your fault.
Any imperfections are on me, agreed, Alex said. Val had turned Alex away from the wall of mirrors in the bathroom, so she couldn't see what was being done. She knew only that it felt like a coat of heavy, oil-based paint had been applied to her skin. Something pulled across the slash on her jaw, tight and constricting. She'd thought the guest bathroom was opulent, but this palace was insane. Two families of five could live comfortably in just this room. She focused her attention back on her computer screen. The housekeeper was arriving again at Karsten's. It looked like she brought groceries in about every other day. Alex noted the things she could see in the tops of the bags. A quart of organic skim milk, a box of bran cereal, OJ, coffee beans. She had the housekeeper's license plate, and Kevin had gotten an address. After dark, she could run out and put a tracker on the woman's car so Alex could follow her to the store. She checked the audio again, and Erin was saying her goodbyes. Alex didn't know how Karsten was able to devote so much time to listening to his daughter talk. It was a good thing he had only one child. Probably he multitasked, just like Alex was doing. On his work calls, there had been no names mentioned at all, let alone one that started with a P. She felt as though if she could just push this worry to the back of her mind, her subconscious would figure it out for her. Unfortunately, she couldn't stop obsessing about it, so, of course, she wasn't making any progress.
Okay, the final touch, Val said, wrestling a wig onto Alex's head. Ouch! Beauty is pain. You can look now.
Alex stood stiffly. She'd been immobile for too long, and revolved to face the mirrors. It gave her a start. She didn't recognize herself right away as the short woman standing next to Val.
How?
Her fingers went automatically to the place where her scabbed wound should be. Val slapped her hand away.
Don't touch anything. You'll smear it.
Where did it all go? The face of the woman in the mirror was unmarred and perfect. Her skin looked like it belonged to a dewy 14-year-old. Her eyes were huge, enhanced without looking overdone. Her lips were fuller, her cheekbones more pronounced. She had shoulder-length, medium brown hair with reddish highlights. It fell in flattering layers around those suddenly high cheekbones.
"Voila, your new face," Val said. "That was fun. Next time, I'm trying you as a blonde. You have a good skin tone. It will look natural with a lot of shades."
"This is amazing. I can't believe it. Where did you learn how to do this?"
"I play a lot of different roles," Val shrugged. "But it's fun having a model. I always wanted one of those big Barbie styling heads when I was a kid."
She reached out and patted the top of Alex's wig.
"Or a little sister. But the plastic head was my preference."
"I'm probably 10 years older than you," Alex protested.
"What a nice compliment. But whatever my age might actually be, you're still not older when it comes to the things that count."
"If you say so." Alex wasn't about to argue. Val had just handed her an unexpected get-out-of-jail-free card.
"My own mother wouldn't know me." "I can go sexier," Val promised. "But you want it inconspicuous."
"This is probably the sexiest I've looked in my whole life. I'd be scared to see what sexier looks like."
"I bet Danny would like it," Val purred.
"By the way, where did I screw that up? What tipped you off there?" Val smiled.
"Please. When two people are that into each other, it radiates off them. You didn't do anything."
Alex sighed. "Thanks for passing your observations on to Kevin."
"You're being sarcastic, but you should thank me. Aren't things easier now without the secrecy?"
"I guess so, but he nearly shot me in the head, so there's that."
"Little ventured, little gained."
Alex approached the mirror wall and leaned in close to examine the disguise. There was some kind of prosthetic skin covering the wound on her jaw. She moved her mouth carefully, watching for expressions that might pull too far, make the fraud obvious. She could see a slight ripple when she smiled, but the layers of the wig mostly obscured that part of her face anyway. She wouldn't have to worry about someone noticing something wrong with her, even close up. Sure, people would be able to tell she was wearing makeup, but most normal women did. Hardly something that would draw attention. She could accelerate her plans now. She didn't need to wait for dark. She grinned, then smoothed the expression to ease the tension in her fake skin. The new freedom was a heady thing. Alex skipped quickly down the stairs, computer tucked under her arm. She already had a pretty workable plan. Low risk, minimal exposure, so she was listening to the calls only in the vain hope that Carson would screw up and say something meaningful. It was unlikely, but she'd finish it out. Later. Right now, she could get started on a specific preparation.
"Huh," Kevin grunted.
Alex saw him look past her to where Val followed.
"Hey, Val, how many virgins did you have to sacrifice to make her look like that?"
"I don't need any satanic help to do what I do," Val responded. "And virgins aren't useful for anything."
Daniel got up from the couch where he was watching the news, taking it seriously as his assignment, and came around the stairs to see what Kevin and Val were talking about. Alex hesitated on the bottom stair, feeling oddly vulnerable. She wasn't used to caring if she looked pretty or not. Daniel did a small double take. Then his face relaxed into a smile.
"I'd gotten so used to seeing you with the bruises, I'd almost forgotten what you looked like without them," he said,
and then his grin got wider.
"It's nice to see you again."
Alex knew she hadn't looked like this on the train, but she let it go. "I'm headed out to place the tracker," Alex told them. "Shouldn't take me long."
"Do you want me to come?"
Daniel asked. "Better to keep your face hidden in the daytime," she told him. He didn't look happy about it, but his expression was resigned. She imagined how she would feel if he ran out to do some surveillance, and she could understand his reluctance. "It won't be anything," she promised.
"Take the sedan,"
Kevin said, gesturing to a set of keys on the counter.
"Wilco,"
Alex said, imitating his soldier tone. He didn't seem to notice. Karsten's housekeeper would probably be home by now, unless she had errands to run. She only worked mornings there. Of course, she could have other clients, but Alex imagined that Karsten would pay well, so he wouldn't have to share. He would want her free if he needed something. Alex drove the black sedan across town, not all that far, really, from Daniel's empty apartment. She was glad he was safely tucked away at Val's. She was sure they'd have some kind of surveillance on his place, just hoping he'd be stupid enough to come back for his toothbrush or favorite t-shirt. The housekeeper's neighborhood had street parking only. She found the decade-old white minivan a block over from the apartments where the woman lived. There was plenty of traffic, both cars and pedestrians. She found a spot near the mini-mart on the corner and set off for a walk. The early summer heat had her sweating almost immediately. Unlike Kevin, she didn't have a myriad of costumes to choose from, so she was in her blazer again today, and it felt twice as thick as usual. Oh well, she needed the pockets. Hopefully the makeup wouldn't sweat off. There were enough people around her that she felt invisible, just one of the herd. The numbers dwindled as she crossed over to the next block, but she still didn't stand out. She pulled her phone out of her pocket and hit redial. Kevin answered on the first ring.
"What's the problem, Oleander?"
"Just calling to say hi," she told him.
"Ah, blending?"
"Of course.
Talk to Danny. I don't have time to blend with you."
"I'd prefer it anyway," she said, but he was already gone. She heard a thud as the phone hit something, and then Daniel said, "Ouch!" Alex took a deep, calming breath. Kevin always made her want to stab things.
"Alex, are you all right?"
"Absolutely." Kevin shouted something in the background.
"Kevin says you're trying to look natural," Daniel said.
"That's part of it," she agreed. She was only two cars from the minivan now. There was a man ahead of her, but walking in the same direction, so his back was to her. She couldn't hear anyone close behind her, but there could be someone who had her in his sight line. She didn't turn to look.
"So, I guess we should talk about something normal people talk about?" Daniel was saying.
"Right.
What would you like for dinner? Do you want to stay in again?"
Alex smiled. "Staying in sounds great. I'll eat anything you feel like cooking."
"You make things too easy for me."
"There are enough difficulties in the world without adding my own." She flipped a few locks of the wig out of her eyes, her fingers knocking into the phone. It skittered across the sidewalk and teetered on the edge of the curb. "Hold on," she called toward it. "I dropped the phone." She knelt and swiped the phone up, holding on to the edge of the minivan's wheel well for support. She jumped back to her feet.